Welcome to the electrifying world of the Marketing AI Sparkcast, the go-to podcast for uncovering the revolutionary influence of artificial intelligence in the realm of marketing. Join Abhi Varma, a visionary in B2B marketing, as he guides you through the dynamic and ever-evolving landscape where technology meets creativity. Each episode promises to ignite your curiosity and inspire you to harness the formidable power of AI to redefine the future of marketing. Get ready to fuel your mind with innovative ideas and trailblazing strategies that will set your brand ablaze in the digital marketplace.
Welcome to the Marketing AI Sparkcast. Today we have an amazing episode with some fantastic insights. You guys are in for a really insightful and educational time. The focus of today's episode is adoption in enterprises and B2B enterprises specifically. My background is B2B enterprise. I've been with B2B enterprises for the majority of my career prior to my current entrepreneurship focus at SparkNovus. But we are very pleased to have Shonadeep Modak, who is the CMO of Schneider Electric Energy Management Business, joining us in this episode, and we will unpack it with him. Shonadeep, welcome to the show.
Hey, Abhi, thanks for having me here, and always great to learn from you as well as get connected and share some experiences here.
No, my pleasure. So I think this is going to be fascinating. You guys have done some really cool stuff, and especially for the size of the organization that you guys are. And for those of you who don't know, Schneider Electric is like a $40 billion enterprise giant. We'll learn more from Shonadeep about that. But yeah, Shonadeep, let's just dive in and tell us a little bit about the organization, about Schneider Electric, and then share a bit about your background and your professional journey leading you to where you are today.
Great, Abhi. Well, let me start with saying that Schneider Electric is a $40 billion global industrial automation and energy management company. And so we're pretty much in all spaces that you can possibly think of when it comes to energy and automation, from your home to the building in terms of how you access a building, the air conditioning management, the lighting and the power management, the data center itself. You can't go longer than 6 minutes on your iPhone without touching a data center than Schneider Electric powers. We are also in the professional services space where we help consult with companies and ensure that their digital and sustainability strategy is able to meet their decarbonization targets. And then we're as well as in the factory side and the industrial side, manufacturing, automation, and IoT as well. So we're pretty much everywhere that you see an electron and you see something move. And we've been in the business for more than 200 years, a global company, and I get to lead marketing for the energy management business. So Schneider's broken up into two businesses, energy management and industrial automation. Energy management is 75% of the company, so call it around $30 billion or so. And I have six different lines of business marketing teams under me, and we've been involved on this journey of generative AI transformation, and I lead it. I lead this initiative for the company right now, for the marketing function to get us all on board with generative AI. And then just on my career, I've been at Schneider now, it'll be starting my seventh year. I've been in the region role and I've been in now in this global role. And then prior to that, I was with GE, which brought me to where I'm living today in Atlanta. And I was in a few different marketing roles, moving up in the different CMO roles in GE, from the distributed generation space to the industrial automation space to the services and power and energy space. And then before that, I was with Exxon, both in sales, finance, marketing, and operations, leading different parts of the downstream segments that they were in.
Wow, that's amazing, man. That's like an illustrious career, lots of energy and energy. So that's amazing. Schneider's lucky to have you with that kind of background. But one thing is fascinating that for organizations that are that big, given what you just said, you need special kind of ingredients to pause your regular marketing activity or what you're doing to really focus on innovation, right? It's really hard to fit this in. Most enterprise marketers have 100 plates spinning all at the same time. So would love to understand how you guys started your AI journey within the marketing organization. Like I said, it takes a special amount of effort and focus and energy, not intended, to get that going. But yeah, unpack that part for us.
Sure. And keep those types of jokes coming. So when it comes to AI, I will say that Schneider is in AI in three ways. So it's hard to escape it being even in my function. Number one is we are part of that AI digital infrastructure. So we're helping build the next data centers that are using AI technology or that are built, that are basically supporting the AI build out. That's inferencing and training data centers that are now starting to come up. We also embed AI software in our products and services as well too. And then just as a marketer, the journey started about 2 years ago where we started to see this burgeoning sort of technology. And I became very interested in it because you think about these inflection points that have happened in marketing. You see that back in the late 80s, we went from being totally, you know, TV and print. We started to see a shift into more digital sort of touch points with the advent of the internet. And then, of course, digital email and things started to really happen in the early 90s. And then coming into the 2000s, we've really automated and done more marketing at scale through all these different touch points. We saw the social media evolution happen. And then now most recently, this seems like the next major transformation for marketers. And so I said, this is what a great moment. Early in my career, I was in the riding the surfboard. Now I get to be starting from the very beginning, jumping on the surfboard as we get going. And so long story short is I said, okay, where do you get started? And basically pulled the team together, task force together to start evaluating different platforms, evaluating where you get started. And we kind of were learning on the way because 2 years ago, there wasn't, even today, there's still really not a great roadmap. You can go Google things, but the one size fits all solutions that people have out there, it's not that. So that was the journey that we've been on since then. And now we're onboarding our entire organization of 1,600 marketers with new AI platforms. And we're hoping that we really start harvesting this fantastic technology for ourselves.
Wow, that's so interesting. Most enterprise organizations, especially the size that you guys are, like a multidimensional Rubik's Cube, right? You have product lines and business lines and regions and functions and that sort of stuff. Just getting your arms wrapped around that makeup of a marketing organization that size, how did you guys operationalize that? What was your approach getting into it?
Yeah. We went through several steps in this process. So first off was forming a task force of passionate people. So I didn't want to force people into saying, all right, I need you and you to really help me with AI. I wanted the people that were super interested and passionate to be part of this journey with me. So finding those, found those people after a little bit of searching. And once we got assembled, we started to look at what are the different parts of AI to get into? And so obviously text generation is the lowest hanging fruit that I think nearly everybody's embarking on. So we started looking at different platforms that could offer us the needs that we had. And then because we are, like we said, multidimensional, what we did was we said, all right, we have to first of all, see what are the benefits and the ROI? How are we going to measure that? And so we put together a pilot design that was effectively going to test with real use cases, people in the region, people in the functional areas of marketing, people in the business side of marketing, to start to see if we can really capture some of the value benefits, the lowest hanging fruit that we were expecting to see, and see if that's truly real, and see if people actually, there is some push and pull on adoption to see where that middle ground would be.
Yeah.
And that's where we had our biggest success, was we found what some of the truths were and some of the fallacies into our assumptions. And then from there, we ended up making some selections on platforms, figuring out how we could integrate them. And then now we're in the process of getting everybody fully onboarded.
Wow, that's cool. What is 2 years? I joke about it. I'm like, AI years are like dog years, but 2 years of AI is a long time, right? And you guys certainly, again, for the size of the organization, are ahead of the curve with most enterprises that I've seen. But I was going to ask you, address maybe the good, the bad, and the ugly. Of 2 years of being on this journey, what have you learned and what have you found?
Yeah, well, I would say let's start with the good. The good would be that people are generally see this, especially my fellow marketers, as something that's truly transformational that they can be part of, that if they're on the leading edge, not only is it something that can help them with their current day job as a resume builder, as in the sort of career development area, it's a new skill that helps you form some few more convolutions in the brain and gives you something else to dimensionalize in your day-to-day. So that by far was some of the, I think, the exciting pieces for most of our people. And then when they tried it and they found some results and they're able to see that instead of just having one scenario, they can have multiple. So you get a one prompt and you get 15 different outputs, or you can have one prompt and get it from different competitor or from different customer perspectives in one shot to give you ideas for concepting and or nearly finished product. So that is the good, I will say. The bad is that there's this idea that you're going to get massive savings from this. And while all you have to do is take your purchase orders and say, if I move that over to generative AI for my agencies or for my other support, what would that look like? If I look at all my people and say, what are the people that are just doing nothing more than moving things along on a process? How could that change? And you end up with these huge numbers. And then everybody gets very glossy-eyed that they're like, this is huge. We could take all this money and put it into actual activation. The reality is when we actually started to dig in and see people using it, what ended up happening was, yes, you can write a prompt and get the output in seconds. But then what you get the chance to do is do more research and then do more additional prompting to then rationalize and fine-tune it. And so what you end up with is a better finished product, but not necessarily all that time savings that you were expecting to achieve. And the other piece of it is on terms of the actual savings, when you think about like, we just go from an agency to straight to generative AI platforms, what we're finding is that a lot of times agencies have certain relationships, they have certain levels of, they have creative talent that you also need to help keep on coming back with a disruptive sort of output. So you still need some elements in the production process. And then lastly, I would say ugly, is that the platforms keep evolving and changing. And I'd say that the moment you find one that you like, there's 10 other platforms that you see that all of a sudden could be offering you something else. And you're like, wow, I need that. And you could end up with a smorgasbord of platforms if you don't coalesce onto one or too few so that everybody gets good and speaks the same language. And then the other piece of it is that you have to constantly be looking after the change and being able to get ahead of it. Because what you start with on your platform or on your tool may not be what a year or two from now may be the right one to be using. And then you'll have to again go through another change management style. So you have to be very adaptable and flexible.
Awesome. Oh my gosh, that was amazing. So I have a couple of questions with each stage of your journey. Right off the bat, like most enterprise leaders, CMOs that we work with at SparkNovus, there is an expectation of when they sell this to their executive team, to their CEOs or CFOs, obviously there's budgets behind it. There is an expectation of what are proof points, what is tangible ROI and that sort of thing. Some sort of a reassurance that all that investment and time is going to be worth it. So did you guys run into that? And if so, how did you traverse that? And I want you to answer this from the perspective of helping other enterprise marketing leaders who may be tuning into this episode on how that was tackled within your world.
Yeah. So let's speak about, we're talking marketing here. So we're going to speak purely about marketing. So in marketing, when you are building a new or you're onboarding a new platform or a new process or approach, the different stakeholders that we have to generally deal with is the IT department, then the HR department, then the business lines, and then, of course, key decision makers that are tangential potentially as well, too, that are going to be benefactors of this. So, for example, let's give you a perfect example. From the IT side, the IT, the chief digital officer, in our case, essentially is asking, what's the platform that's going to be multimodal, that's going to have the most future potential for different video, image, text, audio, and going to, so we can have one thing happening. Now, the reality is there's not one platform that can do all of it today. And there's not one platform that can also automate the process for us as well. So you're talking about multi-steps and multi-platforms if you wanted to create something like that. So there's that tension that was always occurring because they were constantly asking us to look for other platforms. And as we keep searching, you find that there's not one, but yet you're keeping searching because you're hoping that you do find one. So then, of course, there's the actual output. And when you compare multiple platforms at the same prompt, you are going to get different output. Even if it's the same LLM, you're going to likely get different output based on how you've trained the platform. So sometimes one platform would give, again, it's all subjective, the output of it seems like, wow, this is really much more informal, speaks much more to the audience. And then you get another output that might be more technical. And you're like, that's interesting because that's actually getting a lot more detail that I was able to pull out. And sometimes there's not one middle ground that does everything either. So then you're fighting for, with your business stakeholders, which are the right platforms, which is the best platform based on the quality of the output. And it changes based on the type of action or activity that you're trying to prompt for and you're trying to develop the output for. And I'm talking mainly text at this point. Forget video and image. That's a whole nother realm of things. And then you've got sort of your governance, your legal officer saying, what are the risks of this? And what could happen if you're at privacy and security and all that sort of thing. So this was a big jungle gym of navigation that we had to get through to do that. And I would say, I would say smaller companies, probably you guys don't have to go through so much churn to get you something. But when you have hundreds, in our case, thousands of marketers and users of this, you have to look for that optimal. And that's in some cases what took us a little bit longer. Although the good news is that I was impressed with that. We did make decisions to get this on board because we realized we can't have perfect.
Yep. I think with a lot of enterprise organizations, certainly IT and compliance is the first, and all with good intent, don't get me wrong, but it's hard. I think, plus I think the marketing timelines and IT timelines don't match, right? Because I think marketing is expecting to move fast. They want everything yesterday. IT wants it to be more methodical. They already have a pipeline of stuff because they're getting fed in all these different technologies from different departments to evaluate and sign off on. So I get it. But it's really hard for a lot of enterprise organizations, a lot of CMOs that we work with. We hear compliance and IT and legal sort of challenges in doing that. But sounds like you guys were able to obviously overcome those, which is awesome. So my second question in the realm of adoption would be selling it internally. I've seen this with a lot of content marketing teams where there may be skeptics, and for good reason, because they feel that the output that humans are putting out is much more fine-tuned and seasoned. And especially, you always have that kind of the breed of content marketers who are quasi subject matter experts because they've dealt with that content for so long. They understand the personas that they're writing to and that sort of stuff. I've certainly seen my share of skeptics in enterprise organizations where people are like, the output is not that good. So earlier on in this podcast, when you mentioned that you saw an improvement in quality, which was amazing because most people focus on time savings. And obviously, they don't want to compromise on the quality, but it's great to hear that you guys are getting great quality. But I'm just wondering if you guys face any of that and just general skepticism from your large marketing team. And how did you champion that as the CMO?
Yeah. So there is certainly, we could feel, although not verbalized expressly, but you could feel there was some hesitation. And we made a conscious choice that whenever we do talk about using AI, it's AI assisted. And it's almost like a co-pilot sort of terminology that people use versus saying, hey, use AI. AI is going to now be the tone of voice and everything. And then you're going to have to just make sure that it's not saying anything dangerous, but you need to let it go and you hit the send button. That's saying is that everybody is still in control. And that's why I like this co-pilot AI assisted language that we use, because that takes people a little bit off that concern. The other thing that we help do is also make sure that people see it not as an onboarding of a platform, but it's more of an immersion. So that they are treated like it's part of a phase of learning versus a new platform that you have to go to, a new tool. Because let's just face it, the moment all of us get a new tool to have to go log into, behavior is not natural, right? And even today, like these platforms are, some of them are getting more and more embedded in our everyday sort of marketing tools. But for the most part, it's another thing to go into. And so that natural behavior to go use it, it is very slow unless it's driven from the leadership down, where all of us and my leadership team is rolling up their sleeves and actually using it as well, demonstrating it. And that also takes people off the edge that they can be more comfortable with it. So I would say referring to it as a co-pilot, as a AI assisted piece. Number two, making sure that our teams are seeing some of the benefits. And then number three is making sure that we're able to then use it ourselves and be owners of the platforms, and so that the natural behavior starts to get more frequent.
Yeah, I like that. I think there's research out there which says when managers and leaders use the technology themselves, then the organization is more successful. Essentially, you got to drink your own Kool-Aid. So that's great to hear. A stumbling block that often enterprise organizations run into, smaller organizations also run into this, but I've seen it more prevalent in enterprise organizations where I call it, it's almost like a casualty of enthusiasm where you end up with lots of use cases, right? Because there is no shortage of technologies, there's no shortage of use cases. You can end up with the Dead Sea Scrolls of video, content, analytics, email, whatever, social. You can end up with just lots and lots of use cases. And the bigger the organization, like I said, it's great because there's lots of enthusiasm. People are optimistic about it. They want to get their hands dirty. But then as an enterprise, as a leader, how do you approach prioritization of use cases? So that to me is such a fascinating topic because I haven't seen every organization do it one way. So at SparkNovus, yeah, we have our own methodology of how we encourage that. We try to attach it to value and impact. And we've seen some flavors of that too, but would love to hear how you guys, did you guys see that firstly? And then if you did, how did you traverse that?
Yeah. Great question. And I would say I'm interested to hear what you guys do at SparkNovus too. So maybe I'll turn the question back on you. But we started from a use case evaluation from the front line backwards, meaning this is all the work that we do in marketing. Here's what we push out today. What are the most common sort of processes? So for example, product descriptions, blogs, emails, social media posts, research, primary research before you even do anything, media brief. All of this sort of work process, if you look at how that makes the final impact to the front line, then we go backwards and that kind of helps us figure out, at least call it the table stakes of AI, where do you prioritize? So those are how we got to those, we ended up with 20 use cases. Why 20 use cases? Because that's going to sound like a good number. But once we got to that first, that tranche, we found that the cutoff was 20, but it was also all these things, when you look back at how we're spending money, but also what the customer is seeing in terms of all the touch points. These are the things, these are the processes that make that happen. And these are the most common things that are there. And so that's how we help prioritize where our use cases are. Now that is what I call the run mode part of marketing. Then there's the transformational part of generative AI that we have just a small handful of use cases before that we prepared that we're working on now, like account-based marketing, adjusting your hyper-personalization based on trigger points of certain customers. These are some things that are like next gen. However, you could easily get distracted by that, but we need to first make sure that the run mode where everybody's spending their time on, people are starting to use this. Otherwise, your adoption is only for a small select few if you don't focus on that, the core use cases.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, our approach, again, you said it earlier, there's no one size that fits all, but our approach when we work with clients is, I'm obviously simplifying it just in the interest of time, but essentially we make sure that everything is predicated around either a pain point, a problem, or an opportunity. And then based on that, we establish a North Star that, hey, this is all about efficiency in the marketing department, or it could be about demand generation, or it could be about content optimization. Now, all of these things ladder up when connect up to one another, but having that focus is super important. Because if you were to, for every use case, if you had a sticky on the wall, the moment you have a North Star, all the stickies, all the post-it notes that don't align to that sort of move into another bucket. And again, it's not that any one use case is bad or whatever, it's the relative importance of each one of those. And then the ones that are aligned to your North Star, then we start mapping them in a grid where the x-axis is complexity and level of effort and that sort of thing, time taken. And then the y-axis is the value that is going to drive to the business, right? A real life example is working with a client where they were like, hey, we want to do, our digital asset management system has millions and millions of assets, and we want AI to recategorize everything, look in the images and recategorize everything and all that kind of stuff. And I want that to be trained up. So that's one use case. And the other use case was, we want to make sure, can we use AI-based SDR for demand generation? Right. If you look at both the use cases, they're both good use cases, but the value of the SDR use case is way more justifiable and tangible in the relative importance of the two of them. Not saying that the digital asset management use case is not important, but that one was more valuable. So that sort of then gives you your P1s, the ones where there's low effort, low complexity, high value. Yep. And then for each of those, we do some what we call like attributes of that use case. And that's where timelines and cost, because if you spend $1 million on something versus if there's a use case that would improve the lives of your campaign person by spending $10,000 and that's a quick win, you can't compare that because that's not in the same wheelhouse as, hey, we're going to use agents for outbound prospecting, because it's, again, the scale and the complexity is different. And so all those sort of things is where those attributes come to life. And then we work with the business to see how they do it. But it's great to hear the way you guys approached it, because that way you're not stomping on the excitement that the team may have, but yet not losing sight of your strategic kind of focus areas.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting approach that you've taken. One is you put medicine on where the biggest pain is. We're looking at it around where the impact is. Where do you solve most of that? Where's the workload happening today? And that's an interesting, maybe those two could come together.
Absolutely. You know? All right. So let's talk a little bit about what the future holds. It's hard to get away from agents. Although when I speak to marketing leaders, there's a presumption that agent equals autonomous, which we know is not the case. It's 2025, but the agents that are out there, there is still a lot of human configuration and guardrails and manual stuff and oversight and telling them what to do. So We are not in kind of autonomous land just yet, but I'm just wondering what the next 3 to 5 years will hold. And you hear all these sort of statements from the leaders within the AI space, the Googles and the Microsofts and the OpenAIs of the world, where they're talking about agents are going to be taken over and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I was just wondering what your take is on all of that, agents specifically, but just generally, what does... in your opinion, when you think about the future of marketing, the next 3 years, 5 years, what are you thinking? What are you excited about?
Yeah, I've been very curious and speaking with a lot of platform providers around AI, generative AI marketing platform providers around their use cases for the agents. And because I'm very curious, because you hear just Jensen back at CES going all in, they're talking about agentic AI in a very big way. For me, that sparks a lot of interest around being able to automate steps and processes, but also, and what I'm learning so far is that's in the roadmap, but not necessarily coming forward for us as marketers just yet. However, I am seeing like multi-step automations that are happening. So maybe not the entire end-to-end for, let's say, a campaign or let's say some sort of persona research, but maybe I can build an agent that is a synthetic customer, for example, that I can run ideas by, or maybe the agent can at least help me deploy a finished social media post from generative AI, but then deploy it into the market with advertising to that target audience in an automated way. So there might be some small, call it 1-2 steps, if you will, that we might get into earlier, but I'm very interested in trying to then advance us in those areas from a work process standpoint. Maybe it's not an agent per se, but it's at least a few automated steps that could be along the way. But I see that as being really the next phase of being able to be AI assisted, because now you're able to be a much more efficient marketer. You don't need to know how all the platforms work. How does a marketing automation thing work? How does my social listening tool work, et cetera? How does my content deployment system work? It doesn't matter as much anymore. So you don't necessarily, you can focus people on the actual business problems and the business imperatives versus figuring out the tools. Almost like programming and coding in a way.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And obviously, I'm sure you guys are encouraged by all the successes you guys have had over the last 2 years. Are you able to talk a little bit about actual business outcomes, like actual numbers and outcomes?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm going to pretend to tell you the exact numbers, but I will say I'll try to get you generally directionally like what we're seeing. So when we were doing pilot tests, we were doing AI assisted versus human posts. So what we did at the beginning was, this is now probably almost early 2024, is we went through a series of taking the campaign. In this case, this was to our data center customers. And we created posts on the new offers that we had, both human and then AI assisted. And we did a series of posts, both paid and organic. And the AI system wasn't heavily trained, so keep that in mind. But we got, I think, call it open rates of 2-3%. So One thing that was a nice surprise was that it wasn't, okay, it's not, I'm not getting, it's not triggering something hugely different, but the time saved was incredible. Like we went from, again, we just took the post output and then we just made sure that it was saved and then we pushed it out. So we didn't go through iterations with generative AI to then say, okay, try to be more entertainment tone, try to be more, speak to a young, curious individual tone. So we didn't play around with all that, but we got pretty close to the same open rates. Then later on, we've actually used generative AI for blogs where, for example, we set the blog skeleton up and we have generative AI go and do research and go and pull in certain content topics. In this case also is in the data center space where AI was pulling up applications of cooling infrastructure. It was pulling up a lot of information that we had trained it on very quickly. And then we were able to then, one of the AI platform we chose has a scoring system that takes your existing performance and then it uses what performed well to help shape what the output is and gives you a score based on that. And so when you got a score of 87 versus a score of 36, you pick the 87 output and then, or you can boost it further and then have it rewire it. Then we started to see significant improvements in terms of, in this case, organic blog readership. We went from averaging 3,500 views over 3 months on a blog to nearly double that. So that's where we started to see, because the AI was able to go deeper on certain technical content, but able to summarize and synthesize that because you can tell it, the prompt it to say, write it for somebody who is new to the industry and they could make it, it would, maybe was able to make it more digestible in many cases. So that's been very helpful too. So those are just two examples where we're seeing some cases matching the human, some cases exceeding the human. But in this case here, it's just a tool. It's just like where you went from not having a paid app to having a paid app. You get a boost. So that's how I look at it.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. And earlier when we were talking about agents, I wonder if we were to do a redo of this podcast in a couple of years, I wonder if my agent is going to be interviewing your agent part of this just to get an update on how things are going.
Good looking as you and me, you know, that's
awesome. Or just bringing it home, what advice, maybe top three pointers to enterprise marketing leaders to how to start and how to achieve long-term success?
I will do a little bit of a commercial plug. On LinkedIn, I've just started a series called The Journey to Gen AI, where I'm actually talking about different learnings and surprises that happen along the way and turning that into recommendations for others to help, hopefully help them on their journey. And I guess I'll give you a little bit of a preview of what some of those are. One, the first one that I've already published that if you guys take a look at is there is no playbook that's going to help you make you successful. And what I mean by that is if you go right now on Google, generative AI marketing playbook or steps in generative AI, you'll find a lot of stuff out there. But what you'll also find is that they speak in very generic steps and then they don't get into the cultural sort of dynamics that you have to work through that are natural and are specific to your company. And so unless you address those angles of it and you could take those inputs, the best way to get started is to pull in your task force together and use the collective minds to be able to then map out your journey and make sure that it's something that will work for your organization. Just like how in Schneider, we had all these dynamics to have to make sure that we got through the IT side, we got through the marketing leadership side, we broke through on the commercial stakeholders and how they saw the output being valuable. That's great. That could be very different for another type of company. And there's those sort of things. Other sort of big learnings are around what your expectations are around savings and how much you can really get. There's things around the integrations. Do you want to do APIs or do you want to do Chrome extensions, for example, to get started? How deep do you go on deep integrations? How much do you need to go into work steps and workflow versus just getting started? So all of these things I'll address but are surprises that I wasn't expecting that hopefully people can help with. And then maybe in the next podcast, before our agents speak on our behalf, we can come back and share more.
Awesome. Let's do it. Shanti, thank you very much. It was such a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, appreciate it, Abhi. And I look forward to joining you on the next AI Marketing Pulse too.
Awesome. Yes, that's great. Thank you for bringing that up. My turn to do the plug here. The SparkNovus team, we host a marketing AI community. It's called the Marketing AI Pulse. And we host in-person events and webinars, which we were about to start in 2025. We just finalized a partnership with Goldcast. A good shout out to the Goldcast team who've been fantastic. You can follow us on LinkedIn at Marketing AI Pulse and stay tuned on upcoming events.
Yeah, and I've been to several of them, Abhi. So keep doing them. They're amazing. They're absolutely amazing.
Thank you very much. Yep. And thank you guys for tuning in.